Hey, welcome to the Butter Dish. It's Natalie Delaney
and Heidi Ballard.
And today we are hanging out with Karen Nordine, PhD. So tell us about yourself and who you are, Karen.
Hello, everybody. I am super pumped to be here, super pumped to be on the podcast. As you said, my name is technically Dr. Karen Nordine.
Yes.
And I have a PhD in a field that is technically called health communication. And what that really is, it's the study of the way communication influences health behavior. So how can we change our behavior in meaningful ways? And how can communication and strategies and tools and things like that help us do it? So that is me. And I run my own business focused on behavior change called Body Brain Alliance.
Oh, I've got goosebumps.
Seriously. Ooh. That's so exciting. It became your full-time gig recently in March. Is that right?
Sure did. March of so this cool. year, it became my full-time job.
Oh, that's awesome.
So what were you doing before that with your fancy PhD, which I super love, by the way? We're totally jealous of anyone with a PhD, just for the record.
So I didn't realize you didn't know this, but before that, I was a curriculum writer for Precision Nutrition. So I helped write their change psychology certifications, their sleep stress recovery certification. And I did some curriculum design stuff for their team to help make things, you know, engaging and write quiz questions and stuff like that.
Oh my
gosh. And then if
gosh.
You say that you're like 22, I might die right now.
Yeah.
You do. I'm 29. Don't worry.
Oh, still. Oh, I am so like fangirly because I do have that sleep certification that I'm working on.
Yes. PN is like one of our go-tos. It's such a great program. And
so that means
you're not
the PN insider. I should totally like look for like who wrote it and things like that. Oh, well, I'm now at a loss. I'm so excited. Can we just sit here and you just tell us everything?
I know. Seriously, start at the beginning and don't leave anything out.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you like how I got there. Okay. So after I did my bachelor's degree in psychology, because I was like, something is wrong up there and maybe I need to like figure it out. Like
physician feel myself.
About people. Cause I've always been, so actually let me back up for a second. So I like to tell this story about how in like third or fourth grade, there was this girl in my class named Valerie, and Valerie had like this purple pencil case. Okay. She put all of her pencils in there organized all the time. And she would like take out her pencil case and then her pencil case would like still be organized. She just kept it organized. And I remember like watching her in class and like looking at my backpack, and my backpack is like, you know, bits of eraser and like lead shavings everywhere. And like a folder is like, you know, there's papers. And I was like, I was so guilty for not being Valerie. Right. Mm. And so that is kind of the beginning of my self-help journey, because from a very young age, I was obsessed with like, how can I be consistent? How can I be neat? How can I be tidy? How can I be, once I, you know, was so in like fifth grade, when I became aware that I had a body, how can I be skinny? Right.
Yes.
So all of this self-help stuff, was super into it in middle school, high school, college, did this degree in psychology because I was very interested in it. And then I didn't know what to do. And so I got an offer to do a master's degree at the University of Alabama, actually focused on communication. So I was like, okay, I don't really have any other options and I'm going to do this. So I go and do that. And the follow-up for most people who do a master's in that program is that you're going to do a PhD. So I found George Mason University in Virginia, and their program was about health communication. And I originally was studying domestic violence, actually. Oh, wow. And I was studying strategies on like how we reduce domestic violence. But when I got to George Mason for my PhD, I started learning all this stuff about behavior change. And I had read the book Mindset by Carol Dweck, and I got really interested in that because it was so relevant for me and my own change journey. And so I started doing research with my advisor on growth mindset in students and how that impacted their behavior in the classroom and the way they chose to study and all of this other stuff. And so I did my PhD. I was supposed to graduate in 2020.
Oh.
And I was supposed to, well, I had applied for this job where I would be basically the curriculum director for a large university, right? So I would like coordinate basic course curriculum across multiple classes, the courses that everybody take. There's one person that like coordinates. I had applied for a job. I had actually got the job. at this tiny, tiny, tiny university in the middle of nowhere. I had to drive around the cow, to get there on my campus tour. It's really important to be around your people, even if this is not like what I, maybe this is what I'm supposed to do, but I don't think this is what I want to do. And at that time, I was working with a nutrition coach who was PN certified. Long story short, a couple minutes later or a couple weeks later, I ended up actually randomly connecting with their curriculum director, Krista Scott Dixon, on LinkedIn. And she saw my profile and they were starting to build the change psychology certification. They needed a mindset expert. And she was like, this girl is exactly who I'm looking for.
Oh,
so she brought me on as a contractor and I delayed the end of my PhD until 2021 so that I could keep my student health insurance and work part-time as a contractor at PN.
Brilliant.
So I started working at PN in April of 2020 and I got my L1 cert for free because they were like, well, we need you to look at this. So you might as well. I was like, well, yeah, I'm going to do it. Right. And I remember like posting after like deciding I was going to like maybe work with a couple clients. So I was like, ooh, I'm going to just like post that I can work for people for free and being so nerve-wracked about this. Like I know all the business owners out there are probably like, you totally understand like that first Facebook post you made, like where
Absolutely.
You like scream and die in your living room afterwards because you think it's the most mortifying thing you've ever done. But I did it.
Everything you're laying down. Yes.
Yep. I did it. I started working with a couple people for free. And then later on, in October of that year, I really was like, okay, I want to get serious about this. And I started nutrition coaching, which then over the next year evolved into behavior change coaching, which then got so big that I was like, okay, I got to say goodbye to PM.
Ah,
amazing.
What a cool evolution. And also, don't I love like a little bit of like a backpedal, like, remember when you rejected me when I first sent you that letter and now?
Yes, seriously.
Okay. So I want to actually ask you just to like, you know, go back like 17 tabs. When you talked a little bit about like guilty of not being Valerie, I feel like, jeez. I mean, Heidi and I actually both wrote that down, which, you know, like we're just like, oh, Valerie. Right. You know, I think when we, especially like, as you probably have seen, obviously in your coaching sphere in both contexts, whether it's pre at PN or your current one, and then obviously with us and our clientele, is that so many people believe that who they are would just kind of happen to be that way. Like, oh, I became a mom and all of a sudden, like, I just don't know how to do anything anymore. Mm. Or when I got married, or when I left my parents' house at 18. But what I would love to hear a little bit more about is how these behaviors and this awareness is actually happens at a very young age. Kind of like with childhood traumas, we all know that a lot of our beliefs about ourselves and the way we feel about ourselves are really not as a result. I mean, definitely has not helped the situation, but you didn't all of a sudden like wake up at like 16 years old and be like, I suck.
Yeah.
Right? Like we had like built-in belief systems, like from an early age that kind of all slowly hooked on to one another and then created ourself.
Totally. I love that you go back to this early memory where you're like, we're that young when we start comparing and making judgments about ourselves, especially as women. Like I feel like in every phase of my life, I could be like, oh, that was my Valerie. She was my Valerie, or this, you know, or even people on TV or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Well, so I think it's important to understand that like behavior and beliefs both happen in context. So it's not just like, oh, I have this one experience that created this belief. It's that you have this one experience that likely created a thought, and then you were thinking about that and it was reinforced by something. But then eventually, one of the really interesting things is that our beliefs about ourselves impact our autobiographical memory. So if you believe you are bad at biking, you will remember all the times you have fallen down. But if you believe you are good at biking, or if you ask your brain for evidence that you are good at biking, you will start to remember that there probably are times that just aren't in that, like that your brain isn't recalling by default where you were good at biking and you could do that thing. And the other thing I want to touch on here is that, you know, yes, growth mindset does start at a very young age. There are interventions that we can do to boost someone's growth mindset, which is like your belief that you can do a particular skill can be grown, right? That's really what growth mindset is. And it is adjustable, but our early interactions with our parents and our early interactions with our teachers are really what like lay the foundation for that growth mindset.
And it's so wild because like, obviously, you know, we're a couple decades older than you, but even you are that our children, and they're actually doing growth mindset in elementary school right now, which I think, I mean, sometimes I look at that stuff and I'm like, wow, where were you? You wouldn't have had these like damaged 40-year-olds lingering around, but at the same time, maybe, and we had no idea that that was even something that was going to be beneficial, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I love that point that you're making that like, you know, people call it so many different things like confirmation bias or whatever, but that like, I heard this quote that our brains are not truth tellers, they're evidence finders. So the questions you ask yourself are crucial. You know, like if I ask myself, why am I so terrible at this? That's going to be a create a totally different mindset than like, how can I support myself in, how can I make this easier? You know, those kinds of
things. Yeah. And I think one of the interesting, one of the gaps that I see is that as people, we're never taught how to think. So we're taught how to do math and we're taught how to, you know, maybe if you're lucky, change a tire, and we're taught the quadratic formula, but no one ever sat me down and was like, hey, Karen, guess what? Your thoughts are not facts, right? Like that's that thing that your brain is spouting for you, is offering for you. It's an option. Just like responding to the spam text message about the IRS is an option. And I wish that there was more education early on around what I've started to call mind management, which is really, you know, cognitive diffusion and your ability to not only adjust your brain, but for a lot of people, it's just listening to your own internal monologue. Because if you're like me, right? If you, like, I grew up with, my dad was an immigrant from Sweden. And so I do have some of that like immigrant parent mentality situation where he was always like, you have to do really well in school. You have to get good grades. Like bad things are going to happen to us if you are not doing well. And so I've always been told that. And no one ever stopped to say like, hey, Karen, like those things that you believe about yourself, like they're optional.
Oh my gosh. It's so good. Okay. Pausing for a second. Can you hear that buzzing?
No,
you can't hear any buzzing. Okay, perfect. Just wondering if it's coming up on the recording at all. Awesome. Yes. Okay. That's so interesting that your dad's from Sweden. Is he the only one of his family that came?
So yeah. So my sister, and he actually lives back there now. My sister lives there. My grandparents live there.
Oh, how fascinating. Huh. Interesting. So this is obviously what your whole program is about, you know. It starts with like sort of this zoomed in focus on nutrition, and you kind of realize like, okay, this behavior model actually can help people change any number of life paths or whatever. How did you come to create this model for yourself? Like it's really amazing.
Or maybe tell us what the model is.
There we go. That would be good also. Thanks.
Right. So what I like to call it is that what I teach is compassion first change. So I teach you scientific tools for changing yourself in a way that prioritizes compassion and understanding. And my catchphrase is like, your brain's going to brain. Like your brain is a human brain. It is not working against you. It is not sabotaging you. It is not like effing you over. Like it is a brain, and everything it's doing is to protect you and keep you alive. And so the more you understand that, the better.
Nice.
And the background of all of that is that I was coaching people. I was, you know, doing macro coaching, which then evolved into sort of broader health coaching. And I had all these clients who were really struggling to prioritize themselves when it came to health and fitness. So it would be like, oh, well, work was really crazy, so I didn't get to the gym. Or, oh, well, I was at a family barbecue and the only food there was food that I didn't really want to eat, so I just ate it anyway. And I started to really notice that all these things that I had learned in my PhD about behavior change and what influences that, along with, you know, my personal journey with like time management, productivity, focus, all of that stuff started to become really relevant. And so I started to do more of that style coaching, where I was talking to them way more about their thoughts and their lives than I was about what they were eating on a day-to-day basis. And that kind of evolved I worked with a branding specialist. And right after I worked with her, I remember like coming up with this post, like right after my session with her. She's Powerhouse Branding Studio. If you want to like look her up, she's great. And I had written this post that was like, I don't want to talk to you about Greek yogurt, which was like, I don't want to talk to you about how Greek yogurt is a great protein source. I don't want to talk to you about, literally everything else. And so that was really when my brand shifted. Time management, productivity, mindset skills, cognitive diffusion, cognitive flexibility, that kind of stuff.
Isn't it amazing though, how I feel like, especially since you've worked with a set of clientele, probably much like the one that we currently work with, is that most people think it is the Greek yogurt that's holding them back. It's like the lack of eating it, not eating it enough, not eating it regularly, not eating it in conjunction with another carbohydrate.
You can't be successful because you don't like it.
Yeah. Oh, I can't even tell you how people are like, what if I don't like Greek yogurt? Well, like there's like 5 billion other things you can eat, but it's interesting how I think because of whether it's environmental or the sphere that we work in, whether it's Instagram or their best friends or whatever, you hear, oh, you don't want to eat yogurt. That's dairy. And all of a sudden it just sets up this chain of like beliefs that you're like, do I even really believe that? Right. But then it's like, oh, I can't do this behavior because my belief is that dairy is bad for me, but everyone's telling me to eat Greek yogurt. So there's always this like weird dissonance that people put there.
This weight loss goal or fitness goal or whatever. But your kids want to go out for ice cream. And it's like, you're choosing between these two identities. Like, am I like focused, like push through the pain fitness person, or am I like fun, spontaneous? I have no rules about food mom. Like it's like we call it goal dissonance or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Well, and when I was on the team at PN, there were two people on the curriculum team who, one of them, his name's Craig Weller. He's like super, his whole business and what he does is he works with like high level ops, military people who are like in the field for months at a time and have to do like intermittent fasting basically in order to survive. And like these are super high level people. He works with them on mindset and health. And then there was another guy on the team, Brian, they call him BSP at PN. And he worked with really high level athletes. So he was working with like national level football teams. I don't know exactly which ones, but both of them would say the same thing, which is all roads lead to broccoli. Like nothing actually matters. Like no advanced protocol is going to make a slight bit of difference if you can't actually manage your behavior enough to implement it. And people are so caught up in the protocol that they forget that the base level is that you need to learn behavior change skills. You need to learn how to manage your mind, how to be aware of what the heck you're thinking and feeling, and how to use that to direct your behavior the way you want it to go.
Totally. Like we can have a perfect plan, like, but what happens if you don't have, you don't do that 4-hour meal prep block on Sunday because you're too tired or whatever, then your entire week is tanked. Because I love that term, cognitive flexibility. Mm-hmm. That's
the opposite of all or nothing thinking. It's like a real psychological skill. Like I didn't make that up, but nobody knows about it.
Yeah. So we need to totally spread the word. So let's talk a little bit about like what you're obviously an expert in is like behavior, you know, change. So let's just say, for instance, like, you know, and you've worked with this client probably as well. It's like, as I am not good enough to be, I'm just not this person, right? But I want to be this person, or I feel like this is the person that I meant to be. Or, you know, we hear that a lot. Like, I just know that if I could do like these 17 things, I would be this kind of person, but yet not acknowledging the fact that you're actually a pretty valuable human on your own. It's more just about like your thoughts about the behaviors and the behaviors that you believe you either need to do or you need to maybe even start doing.
Totally. Valerie's pencil case. Like yeah. I want to be a Valerie that have it all look perfect.
Right. But in reality, we don't know that maybe Valerie had like extreme OCD and like the pencil case was literally the only thing that got her to school.
Totally.
Right. I mean, we have no idea. Right. But the assumptions we make around, well, Valerie's just more organized than I am.
Mm.
Right.
And right. It's always better to be more organized.
Right. Well, and what I think people don't understand is they don't understand how to identify and manage their own feelings. So what you do when you don't know how to identify and understand your own feelings is that you try to over and over behave in a way that changes your feelings or manipulate your circumstances so that your feelings change. So you tell, this is like the classic example of the person who's like, oh, when I lose these 10 pounds, I will love myself. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Every time with that fail, if that person manages to lose the 10 pounds, which there's a high likelihood they're not going to do that because the self-hate is going to sabotage them, right? So they manage to lose the 10 pounds, they get to their 10 pounds lighter self, and they still don't love themselves. And maybe it's not like their abs. Maybe they have the abs they've always dreamed of, but now they're like obsessed with something that, you know, like my chin looks funky or whatever.
Totally.
And the goalpost will just keep jumping if you're using your circumstances or your behaviors to dictate how you feel about yourself. And so in Alliance Coaching, we follow these four fundamental steps for behavior change. And they are awareness, acceptance, adjustment, action. So in order to change something about yourself, you have to first become aware of that thing. Like, hey, this is a belief that I have about myself. I am aware of it. Then you have to accept, like, hey, I understand why I believe this about myself. I accept that it's natural for me. You don't want to have that double layer of judgment. Like, oh, I think I'm shitty. And I think it's so shitty that I think I'm shitty. Why can't I just think I'm great?
Oh my gosh. You use the awareness against yourself.
Right. Right. So you're like, oh, now I have all these, this. And actually our clients really go through it. They start with us and then they go through it because they're like, wow, I really think I'm so horrible. Or like, wow, I'm really aware of all these, you know, behaviors. And they want to jump right to adjustment. They want to jump right to action.
Totally.
But you cannot get to adjustment or action until you pass through acceptance and you learn to let yourself be a human being and let your brain be a brain. And maybe it's not that you suck at follow through or you don't have discipline or you don't have willpower. Maybe your plans or your vision for yourself is wildly unrealistic and totally not compassionate.
Totally. And I this is amazing. I feel like people resist that acceptance so much because they think like, oh, if I'm okay with it, if I'm okay with where I am, then I will lose all my motivation to change, which again, just reinforces like the how you perceive yourself is the whole deal. You can accept it and it still doesn't have to, like, compassion first. Accepting it and understanding it doesn't mean it has to be, you know, your favorite thing about yourself or whatever.
And that's the irony is that the awareness part of it is that, like, most people don't even actually really want to look at themselves because they are like, I already know that I'm like totally like not worthy the way I am.
Right.
Instead of realizing like, is that really true?
Well, totally. If you're at like a 9.8 of like self-loathing, the last thing you're going to want to do is like
create some awareness
more about it. Right.
Yeah. Well, and one of the biggest myths about self-compassion is that self-compassion means that you look at your previous behavior and you decide everything's totally okay with you. When in reality, self-compassion is absolutely necessary for change because self-compassion is about understanding why a behavior happened and understanding why it is happening. And if you want to change your behavior in the future, you can try to solve the problem all you want, but until you solve for the cause, until you acknowledge the cause and you make a plan that respects and acknowledges that cause, you're not going to change it, right? So like,
totally.
I'm going to give like a really quick example on my life. So I am tracking my macros and this past, I was sick for a week and then I was really struggling to get back into tracking. And particularly my sleep schedule has been a little bit off. And so I've been having a really hard time eating breakfast. Now there's part of me that wants to be like, oh, well, I was doing great before. I just need to go back to the exact same plan, right? This was so easy before. I'll just do it again. Or I'll just eat breakfast tomorrow. I'll just make a choice. I'll make a decision that's going to be different. Right? That's like me trying to jump right into adjustment. Mm. What I did was I really thought about the situation and I was like, okay, yesterday I didn't eat breakfast at all. And I didn't hit my protein goal for the day because I didn't eat anything till like 2:30 PM. What's up with that? Right? I can understand that I have a heightened amount of work stress right now. And so I want breakfast seems like too big of a stress. Like it seems like too, it's going to take too long. That's what my brain is sending me. Right? I only know that because I'm self-compassionate enough to really ask myself, like, why? From a compassionate, curious standpoint, like, why is this happening? Right. So breakfast is going to take too long. I don't have anything that's easy. That's the other thing. I want it to be easy. Right. And then I didn't have anything that was appealing to me. So that's the awareness. I then have to accept, like, I want something that's easy and quick rather than like, oh, well, I just need to like willpower up and push through and like decide to be a person who makes breakfast. No, 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 no. Right now, I accept that I need something easy and quick. So then I can make an adjustment, which is I ordered a 12 pack of those Fairlife 45 gram protein shakes, Elite Core, whatever. And guess what? The action I took this morning was I got up, I didn't want to eat breakfast, I drank a shake, and now I'm on the right track for the day. So that's like a tiny example, but that is the process we use in coaching with clients, because it's, you cannot make a realistic plan for adjusting your behavior until you have enough compassion to see the real genuine reasons your brain is driving you towards the behavior you don't want to be doing.
Love it. Love it. What would you say the difference between self-compassion and self-pity is?
So pity is a really interesting emotion, because pity is really connected to this idea of a should. Mm-hmm. So it's like, my life sucks and it should be better. Or like, I'm in this circumstance and I feel so bad for myself because it should be different, right? Mm-hmm. Versus self-compassion is like, I understand why I'm in this situation. I understand why this might be hard for my brain. I can see that I'm going through a difficult time right now. That doesn't necessarily mean, for a lot of people, self-pity is like an unhealthy emotion, because it paralyzes you.
Yes.
Because it's like, I can't do anything about it. It's in your external locus of control. It's because of your circumstances. Versus self-compassion, what that actually does is it helps you take responsibility. Because when you understand the reasons why, you understand that those reasons come from you.
Well, and so I love that, even just the idea of even compassion, and even in the framework of like even compassion for other people, because I feel like a lot of things that kind of trend, I think the word grace was trending a lot, right? Like, mm-hmm. Oh, I'm just giving myself grace. It's like, grace is great, but there's a point where like, is it grace, or can you just have to like look at it completely differently? Like, I think so many times I'm like, I'm just gonna give myself grace for not, you know, eating breakfast. Like, but then at the same time, it's like, that gives you really no awareness of why you're not.
Yeah.
Right. You're just kind of being like, it's okay that I didn't do it today, but it's like, why did I really not get to eat breakfast? Like, to go to your example, it's like, well, because I need something easy. I'm overstressed right now. And like, that's where the compassion piece is. It's like it's taking grace a step further. I feel like it's like, mm-hmm. let's actually like give ourselves grace. Sure. But like, why?
Yes.
What's happening? What's in the situation? It's a little bit more of an awareness, where compassion is like, hey, you're really stressed out about work right now. Right.
Totally.
It's like, even, you know, we're talking this morning, and I love that you brought up your example, Karin, because it was like, you know, we've had summer schedule. So we were going to the gym at 6:30 in the morning. And now that school's back in, like, our gym schedule has to be 5:30 AM, which 4:45 in the morning feels a whole heck of a lot different from 5:45 in the morning, especially it's dark and everything like that. And so, you know, I text Heidi last night, like, are we going to the gym tomorrow? And it's just like, the idea of just even moving your time frame an hour earlier just feels a little paralyzing. And then we could have done the same thing like you were before. It's like, well, we used to go to the gym 5 days a week.
What's so hard about it?
Yeah. We used to get there at like 4:45. Like, what do you mean you can't wake up again? And you could shame yourself and gaslight yourself into a place of like, you know, almost like, well, you should have done it. You've done it like a million times. How come you can't do it? And instead it's like, why don't we just move the clock a little bit earlier and go for a walk today? And then tomorrow we'll move the clock even a little bit earlier and go for another walk. And then all of a sudden 4:45 will still be painful, but it won't be like, you know, taking a water, like an ice cold water bath. with your habits, right? And your behaviors, yeah. Because it's true. Have we done it before? For sure. But have you also, you know, created allowance to realize that your current behaviors are not the same as that those behaviors are?
Totally. I feel like there's such a lack of self-compassion for women in this space, that I feel like this, it's a very confusing concept, I think, for some women to implement. So would you say that kind of an easier way to tell if you're giving yourself compassion versus pity, or like, quote, letting yourself off the hook, close quote. Like, if you're willing to look at yourself and you're willing to think critically about it, not in the sense of criticizing, but rather like the questions you were asking, you know, what's going on here, that curiosity versus judgment kind of approach. So interesting.
Every single client who has asked me if they're giving themselves too much grace is not being self-compassionate enough. Every single time I'm asked that question, am I being too self-compassionate? Am I letting myself off the hook? No, you are not being compassionate enough with yourself, because letting yourself off the hook is when you're like, oh, well, I'll move forward. That is not self-compassion. Self-compassion is, I chose this action and I understand the reasons why. So if you're letting yourself off the hook, you're not actually being self-compassionate. And so I just like, that's a misconception that I get a lot, right?
Yeah.
The other thing that I see, and this is like a really the bone I have to pick with the industry, which is that people offer this like quick tip of like, be self-compassionate. It's like 5 tips for hitting your macros. Be self-compassionate. Right? Like, we've been there. But like, how? How? Right?
Like, what does that even look like or sound like? Exactly. Yeah.
And there's so many things like that, which is why, so as part of Alliance Coaching, our clients get a piece of curriculum. They get an actual training and activity every week along with their check-in. And we have stuff about compassion because there are evidence-based interventions out there, tons of them that help, you know, quote unquote, like non-clinical populations, which is like normal people, right? So that's why it's within my scope of practice, because it's for normal people, mm-hmm. help them increase their own self-compassion. And one of those interventions relies on you identifying a previous behavior and listing the individual reasons why that behavior happened, because that is what helps build self-compassion. It's also what a fundamental component of self-compassion is common humanity. So not only understanding that like these are the reasons, but that everybody at some point does this thing, right? That like X, and I say this all the time, it's like procrastination is a normal part of being human. Not being able to focus for 8 hours a day is a normal part of being human, right? Not being able to be 100% consistent all the time is a normal part of being human. It doesn't mean something is wrong with you. It doesn't even mean that you need to like build skills in order to get there. Like there is no there. There is nowhere. There's no like level of life you can get to where you don't procrastinate. And the quicker that you let go of those unrealistic expectations, the happier you're going to be with your life.
Oh, amen. Serious amen. Oh my gosh. Okay. Amazing. All right. So we have awareness, acceptance,
mm-hmm. Adjustment,
and then action.
So mm-hmm. good.
I feel like I'm in class right now.
I feel super I know. Good. I love it. I love it. Well, and it's always so interesting. I love learning different behavior models. I mean, I went to life coach school, and theirs is, you know, circumstances, thoughts, feelings, actions, results, or like, you know, different ones that are be, do, have. But I just love how you break this down. That's super good. So anything you wanted to add about adjustment or action? I mean,
the last thing I'll say is that adjustment and action in our model are separate, because a lot of the skills that people really need are actually like compassionate planning skills. So you need not only to be aware of the previous behavior to accept that you're a normal human, but then you need to be able to look at the next time that situation is going to happen again, the next time that behavior is upcoming for you, and you need to actually make a plan and actually prepare your future self for that situation. And then you can take action. And so a lot of people want to skip that adjustment period too. They're just like, oh, I'll just figure it out. Like, oh, I'll just make a decision. And it's like, well, no, you won't just figure it out. Your brain in that moment will drive you towards the safest, most convenient option. So unless you have a plan ahead of time, it's not going to go well.
So. Totally. And even if it's not a super rigid plan, right? Like I'm going to only have this amount of this or whatever, or I need to know absolutely everything that's served at the thing. It's like, just think it through ahead of time. Like just that it can be honestly as simple as that. Like, how do you want to handle it? How do you want to feel while you're there? Like just thinking through ahead of time is something that's shockingly easy to avoid, similar to the awareness piece.
Yeah, right? And the brilliant part about your model in all sorts of ways is just that like most of us are designed to go straight to adjustment. Like I feel gross today, got to go cut calories.
Yeah.
I don't like how I am right now, got to go lose weight. I don't, you know, like our answer is always an adjustment when it's totally. Like, how will we actually look like, what's going on with you first? Right. And nobody likes that answer, right? Like, what are you actually feeling about? Like, why do you feel like you need to lose weight? They're like, stop it. Just give me my macros. And you're like, hold on. Like,
why do you think 125 is the number? Like, where did that come from?
Right.
Totally. It's like, but it's, I love how you point out that that's giving circumstances or the things outside of you all of the power to determine how you feel inside. Oh, that's super good. Super good. So, and when you said self-compassionate planning skills,
mm-hmm.
that's really good. So you, what would an example of that look like in yeah. like, say I'm trying to find I say I don't have time to work out.
Yeah. So when you're looking into the future, what I'm really talking about with self-compassionate planning is making a plan where you get to be a human as your future self, not tasking your future self with like becoming wildly different than you are in this exact moment, right? So there's actually research that shows that people will say like live in the present, right? But the research shows that people are healthiest when they spend an equal amount of time considering the past, the present, and the future. So one of the things we have clients do is like a daily check-in where they look at, these are my behaviors that I did today, whether or not they happened. Then we look at, okay, what was today like? And we also plan for the future, like what's tomorrow going to be like? Because you want to obviously be present and live in your life, but you also want to be doing that self-compassion, considering what happened in the past and why, and thinking forward to the future and planning. So to your example, let's say that I have a really busy week next week and I want to work out. The plan that maybe my default instinct is going to be is to be like, oh, well, I'll just wake up at 5 a.m. and I'll get all four of my workouts in. Right?
Totally.
I have not been getting up at 5 a.m. So obviously that plan screws over my future self. And your relationship with your future self is just like your relationship with anyone else in this world. It doesn't just happen. You don't just start considering your future self. You have to, it's like a new coworker, right? On the first day, you don't give a flying F about your new coworker, right? But after you've like, you've talked to that person, you've started thinking of that person more often, then by like 6 months down the line, you know exactly like what that coworker needs when it comes to like this particular assignment or whatever. So you have to think about your future self, what your future self actually is going to want, what that future self is actually going to need, and you need to prepare accordingly. So that might be, instead of saying, I'm going to wake up at 4 a.m. and do all my workouts, the compassionate plan might be to say, hey, I'm going to get one workout done on Sunday. And then I'm going to tell my coach this week, hey, I'm sorry, it's a really busy week. I'm not going to be able to make it happen.
Amazing. Oh my gosh. You are, I love it. Thank you so much, Karin. You're incredible. This has been so fun to talk to you about this behavior model and hear your perspective. We appreciate it so much.
Okay,
so
tell everyone about your program and where to find you. Because I mean, you know, you have big fans of us. We're like, log off and sign up.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. So
I was eyeing your course builder, not going to lie.
I have a couple things. So I'll talk about three things. So if you're a human who wants to change your behavior, I've got really two options for you. One is more of a DIY version, and that is my membership, which is called Change Academy. So it's $22 per month. Every single month, I do a 2-hour workshop, science-driven workshop on a behavior change topic. So this month we did procrastination. I literally spent 2 hours covering the science of procrastination, how to reduce it in your life. And with each workshop, you get some type of resource. So we built a procrastination diary for our members and have them analyze their procrastination tendencies. We also do events. So we do like speed dating so that you can find other people who are also interested in self-development, make adult friends. We do like study halls. So you have accountability.
I love that. I thought you were going to say speed dating to find other people who procrastinate as much as you do. I'm like, sounds great. Sign me up.
No. And procrastination is the theme for this month, but we've done like how to motivate yourself, goal setting, time management, like all kinds of different ones. Oh, next month, I don't know when this is going to come out, but next month we will be doing how to upgrade your workflow. So that's going to be a fun one. So that's totally DIY. But if you are the type of person who likes accountability, who needs support, and who wants someone working directly with you, we do have Alliance Coaching, which is what I've been talking about. And that's our one-on-one coaching program. And there's a variety of different like tiers and stuff, but our pricing ranges from about $119 per month, which is a incredible value for coaching. Like coaching does not come that cheap, but we're able to make it work. Really? All the way up to like $449 if you are interested in more VIP style stuff. So those are my options for change enthusiasts. And then if you are a coach or business owner listening to this, I have a course called 6-Hour Syllabus, and it's where I teach you curriculum design. So I teach you how to design learning materials, whether that's like your email list, a mini course you want to build, curriculum for your one-on-one program, design it in a way that is scaffolded and actually takes into account not only like human learning, but also specifically how adults learn. So.
Awesome. Incredible. You are, dude, I can't even imagine what you're going to be like at 43. You're amazing. I am so thrilled for you. I'm so happy we were able to get you on this podcast.
I know. Well, I feel you. I'm like guilty of not being Karen. It's fine. <Not enough. laughs> Gonna be fine.
It's totally gonna be fine. Single tier.
Yeah. Oh, signing up. Go talk to my therapist now.
Seriously. Honestly. And where can our listeners find you?
Oh yeah. So my Instagram is my name, Karin Nordine, PhD. It's KarinNordin, PhD. And then my website is just bodybrainalliance.com.
Fantastic. Dude. Everyone head over. Absolutely. I definitely know this is going to be like a two-parter because we have more behavior things to pick your brain about for sure.
Absolutely. I highly recommend her free mini course.
Yeah. Heidi binged that thing. Like,
yeah.
She's like, who are we having on Monday? And then I said her name. And then the next thing is like, oh my gosh, have you done our course yet? Yeah. I was like 2 seconds after I sent the text. So
yes,
you know, if Heidi's a believer, it's.
Oh, come on.
Love it.
Oh my gosh. Amazing. Thank you again. And we would love to have you back soon. So we will be in touch. Thank you.
Whew, you made it. The butter dish didn't melt your face.
Thanks so much for hanging with us. If you enjoyed that episode, we'd love it if you would subscribe, share it to your social media, or leave a comment. That all really helps, so the kids say. If you want to find us, you can find us at Instagram at ButterYourMacros.
On the web at ButterYourMacros.com.
Twitter and TikTok at What's Up Butters. And we'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thanks.